Small businesses with DSL get cranky. Small businesses with Comcast Workplace get cranking. That's because we offer our customers download speeds up to twice as fast as DSL, along with McAfee security, 24/7 business class support, website solutions, and more. It's no wonder Comcast Workplace has been ranked number one in small business broadband customer satisfaction. That's according to a survey by the Yankee Group. Comcast Workplace. Speed, security, know-how.
All right, it's my great pleasure to welcome marketing expert John Carlton to the show. John is the marketing rebel. He's been writing copy for 25 years as a top freelance copywriter. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Garrett. Glad to be here.
John, let's talk about record your pitch. It's a tactic you've developed. Why don't you explain it to our listeners?
Okay, there's actually two sides to it. When I deal with rookie writers or people who need to get a pitch out quick, say write an ad, and they're not sure how to even begin, I ask them if they can already sell someone face-to-face. That's a key part of this tactic. If you already know how to sell someone face-to-face, then just record yourself actually doing that. You probably need to do it several times. If you're doing it on the phone, you need to get both sides of the conversation. If you're doing a face-to-face, you need to tell the person, of course, that you're recording. And you're only doing this so that you can transcribe you in fever pitch, delivering your sales message to someone. That transcription is pretty much the essence of what your ad should look like, because it will cover all the points that a good ad needs to cover.
That's a great strategy, John. If you can sell someone face-to-face, then it should work if you transcribe it properly on paper, correct?
Absolutely right, yeah.
All right, so what are some of the strategies then for getting that fever pitch?
Well, if you're already a good salesman, a good face-to-face salesman, you will know when you're in it, and that's why I suggest that you do it several times, because you have to be unconscious of the fact that you're being recorded. So that's
right.
That's probably, you know, kind of get into your stride. The other side to this is that if you're not necessarily confident that that you can sell face to face, or that you have those all the elements down, then I suggest that you go through a mental process where you you imagine that you are in, say, a bar or a restaurant or something, and a perfect prospect walks in, sits down next to you, and says, not to you but to the bartender or the waitress, and says, "Wow, I'm really down today. I have," and then he describes the exact problem that what you have fixes.
Okay.
And then ask yourself, what would you say to this person at that time? Remember, he's a stranger to you. He doesn't know you. He doesn't like you. He would be skeptical of anything a stranger would say. So what do you say to get his attention, to move into telling him what you have, why it might be for him, and how he can get it? What you would say to him at first, and I call it the "excuse me, I couldn't help overhearing you" tactic, which is kind of a mouthful, but basically it's thinking about that situation, because a person coming to your ad is a stranger. He doesn't like you. He doesn't know you. He doesn't understand your product, and you've got a lot of...
And he's skeptical. You're right. You made that point earlier. He's skeptical from the get-go.
Absolutely. And so this forces you to know what you're selling, to get all those elements down. A lot of times rookie writers or people that are writing an ad, or people that don't know how to judge a good ad, which is another problem a lot of my marketing clients have, they will deal with a copywriter and not know if what they have is any good or not. You have to go through that process of establishing instant credibility, you know, who you are, why you're the guy to talk to, what it is that you bring to the table. And one of the problems, of course, that a marketer has is that either he comes off as bragging too much, mm-hmm. because what you say doesn't necessarily ring true to a stranger's ears, or he doesn't lay out his credibility at all because he's kind of shy about it. So the two hardest things I have to do when I'm teaching clients how to write their own copy is to get them to support whatever they say, that just because you say it, and especially if you say it and you add an exclamation mark or two, doesn't mean that the person reading it is going to buy it. That's where testimonials come in. That's where giving examples. That's where learning to prove everything you say comes in. The other side is that if you're too shy about this, I try to get marketers to stand up, step forward, and say, "Yes, I am the go-to guy in this particular niche, and what I'm about to tell you will, you know, affect your life in profound ways, and here's why." And then you start explaining your reasons behind that. It's called reason why advertising, and when I start breaking it down to those basic elements, people start to get it a little clearer.
But there is a balance there between braggadocio and being too shy.
It's exactly that kind of balancing act that you have to have. That's why testimonials come in. When you tell me that you're the best lawyer in town and you're just the greatest thing since sliced bread when it comes to being in a courtroom and arguing your case, I kind of yawn, and inside I'm thinking, yeah, right. Imagine you're sitting there in that bar or that restaurant. You're talking to this guy, and he turns to you and he says, "Why should I believe anything that you say?" And at that point, someone walks up that he recognizes, or someone walks up that out of the blue and says, "Oh my God, Garrett, I can't believe you're here. I'm so happy I found you. I've been looking for you. I wanted to thank you for giving me the advice you gave me before. It absolutely changed my life. It did everything you said it would do, and I'm just really happy." He turns to the guy that you're talking to and says, "Hey, if Garrett is talking to you about, you know, the X, you know, product, you know, you really should listen. It's very, very good." And he walks away. And then as he walks away, the guy thinks, "Who is that?" Another person walks up. Then the bartender, the waitress, comes up and says, "Oh, you know, Garrett absolutely knows what he's talking about. I listened to him. He turned my life around, you know, 180 degrees, that type of thing." So that kind of third party endorsement carries enormous weight. And that's why I tell people who have been in business for decades to get testimonials, they blink at me. They've never gotten a single one, and
right,
they're not sure how to do it. When they go back to their list, they just go back to the people who have been happy with what you've done with them and say, "Would you mind terribly if you gave me a testimonial? I'll help you give it because I want you to say, you know, I want you to tout me in certain ways." You don't want a rah-rah testimonial. Garrett's just a great guy. You want specifics. Mm-hmm. Garrett helped me last year. In 6 months, he helped me turn around a situation that was X into Y, which is what I wanted, blah, 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 that type of stuff.
Well, now, John, you focus, what I'm hearing is that you like the long copy format where you have time to explain the benefits and use the testimonials to your advantage. Care to comment on the long copy format?
25 years ago, when I began my career as a freelancer, the long copy format had gone into ill repute and disrepair. It was not used at all. Madison Avenue of, you know, the agencies that do slogans and the stuff that you see mostly on TV now, which is all graphics and kind of breezy stuff and no call to action, that ruled the roost 25 years ago, as it does now. But online, especially, long copy has made a huge comeback. And the reason that I of what's called the long copy school is because a ad is a tiny little salesman. And that means that your salesman, you wouldn't want to limit your salesman to the number of words he could use. A good salesman starts at the beginning of his pitch. He runs through all the things he needs to do. He establishes credibility. He makes a believable promise. He starts to prove things. He makes a guarantee, does a little takeaway, adds a little urgency, does all this stuff. And once you're through with that pitch, you know, you start at the beginning, you end at the end, then you look at how much copy you covered. And especially online, where there's no printing costs involved, or there's no postage involved, as there's in direct mail, some of the best selling online letters are 20, 30 pages long, manuscript copy pages long. They're usually a single scroll.
Right.
But it's because you start at the beginning of your pitch and you end at the end. Your ad is a tiny little salesman.
So is there any such thing as a short sales pitch?
There can be if you are sitting at that bar and the guy explains the problem that you solve, and you turn to him and you can tell him in two or three sentences why you're the guy that he should be dealing with. If you can do that in a few sentences, then yeah.
Okay. But the long-form sales pitch, let's go into that a little bit in greater detail, John. It's made a comeback, correct?
Making a huge comeback because the web has opened up the entrepreneurial world in a way that direct mail and print advertising couldn't, because of the cost restrictions. Online, you can get a URL for, you know, $7 from GoDaddy and be up and running with very few skills using PayPal, so you don't have to get a merchant account. This has allowed a whole new class of entrepreneurs and small businessmen who weren't able to do large campaigns before to suddenly be elbow to elbow with the big guys. When you're online, you can be at equal level with the largest companies in the world, because it's just a page. You know, you can fill the monitor screen page with all the stuff you need to sell stuff, just exactly as, you know, Ford or Coke or anyone else does.
Now, John, in the long form copy, I notice you talk about the benefits and all, but you also see a lot of push on buy now. Let's talk about buy now.
That would be the urgency part. That would be the fact that a good salesman. When I started out, I started hanging out with really good salesmen who had taken their sales skills and gone to writing copy. Almost all the guys that I mentored under, you know, low those many years ago, had started out doing door-to-door sales, like selling vacuum cleaners and encyclopedias, and they had no illusions about what it took to get a stranger to pay attention to you, to actually believe what you say, and to get to the point where he doesn't just say, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good product, but he actually pulls his wallet out, gives you money, and says, yes, I agree with you, let's finish the transaction. That, of course, is the close. And what those good salesmen knew, what all good salesmen know, is that you often only have one shot at that customer. If he says, if he's on your website or your ad or you're talking to him face-to-face, if he says, I think this sounds really good, I'll think about it, I'll come back later, then chances are you've lost him.
What are the statistics? Do 9 out of 10 people never come back?
Yeah. And once you start realizing that, and once a client starts realizing that what it costs, the energy, the money, the time, the everything to get that person to pay attention to your sales pitch, I mean, that's a big deal. And once you realize what you've done, then the idea that you're going to back off at the end, that you're going to, I call it selling from your heels. If you're going to say, well, when and if you're ready, come on back, we'll be here, no problem if you don't want to do it right now. If that's the way that you think you're going to sell, then you're sorely mistaken. Good salesmen will add some type of urgency to this. They will do what they need to do to make the person finish the transaction right there. And of course, one of the best ways to do that is just to have a great guarantee. It's one of the things a lot of people forget about. And it's the idea that you shoulder all the risk. But that takes away a huge amount of the objections in the buyer's mind.
So those money-back guarantees, the 30-day money-back guarantee, are very useful in your opinion.
They're not just useful, they're almost completely necessary. Now, there's a problem in that. If I don't believe you're real or that you're the guy I need to deal with, then any amount of guarantee isn't going to matter. On the other hand, if all you do is a 30-day guarantee and you get me to think, well, maybe 30 days isn't enough, but you really stand behind your product. I have clients do lifetime guarantees on their products. A lot of the large mailers I deal with, have lifetime guarantees. In other words, they say, look, you can get your money back right away if you want, but even 5 years down the road, if you decide, that really wasn't worth it, you can come back and we'll give you your money back then. What that does is they're able to then say, that's how confident we are. We've been in business for 50 years. We're going to be here another 50 years. We're downtown Miami Beach. We're not going anywhere. You can call our number. You can, we're a solid, good organization. We stand behind our stuff, and you don't even need a reason to tell us that you want a refund. You take away all the objections in the guy's head.